Ooh, we got a good one this week here, folks. This is the RacerX Canada somewhat live and uncensored podcast show, and we've managed to secure none other than the beast from the east, Damon Bradshaw. Before we get into this whole thing, remember that it's brought to you by Shift Canada, and check them out on the web at shiftracing.ca, and please buy some gear, whatever it takes. Thanks to all of you who listen weekly and tell me how much you enjoy it. And I have to tell you that as much as you guys enjoy listening to these, I like doing them. So thanks again for that. I especially love doing them this particular week when I somehow managed to get Damon on the show. Still not really sure how that works. Thanks to Randy Richardson at Michelin for getting me the number to the Beast and making sure that Bradshaw did want to indeed do it. Damon is a legend in the sport despite him not really ever winning a major championship. And in this interview, he explains why he thinks the fans still love him. I guarantee you that if you went through the Pro Pits today and took a poll, the majority of riders, mechanics, and industry people would say that Damon was their childhood hero. He was definitely one of mine for sure growing up, and I have to apologize ahead of time if I sound like a bit of a fan during our phone call. It was just really cool for me to talk to him, and he seems really down to earth, and I just... sometimes I lose it a little bit in this, you'll hear. He's okay with his past, and most importantly, he's very honest and open, when I asked him some tough questions, so that was cool. When I was at Yamaha, he came to a couple of races, but I never really got a chance to talk to him, but I sure wanted to. Well, years later, I got my chance, and luckily for all of you, I recorded it. This is a long one, but it's all podcast gold. This show and all my shows are available for download on iTunes, and remember, Shift Gear brings us all to you. Shift, the choice is yours. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Hey, this is Steve Cox with RacerX, formerly MX Word Nerd on the internet. You're listening to the Mathis podcast, which I understand is good, but I'm not on the internet anymore, so I don't know.
Damon Bradshaw, thank you for doing the RacerX Canada podcast show. I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but I took a listener vote, and you won. You were the guy most people wanted to hear from. You beat Davey Coombs. He got second, and I don't even know who got third, but... you won.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. It's neat to know. And I'm like, again, I don't know much about it. So I don't know if it's mostly all over Canada or U.S. or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, it's on the RacerX Canada site, but it's also on the U.S. site. So
okay.
I get emails from all over. So
right. Well, no, it's pretty cool to know that, you know, I guess still that many people kind of remember because it's so easy to be, I think, forgotten, you know, in this sport. And so to still be people to be thinking about me makes me feel pretty good. I mean, I think it's funny. You think you'd get it out of your system, but I think daily of, man, what, and I haven't been on a bike in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually it's going longer than 2 years now, but I have a brand new 450 sitting in the garage that a shop in Caldwell, Idaho gave me to take out and play with. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, I keep telling myself every day, I'm going to go out and get on it and go ride. And I always thought, man, if I'd like to do a race. You know, what race would I like to do? And, you know, what national would I like to ride? And it takes so much work because, obviously, you go and do it. You want to be the best you could be. And, I don't know, for some reason, Mount Morris always sticks in my mind, even though it's on the other end of the country. But I always love that place.
Yeah, we actually, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a guy named Rob Bidas that organizes a Legends couple laps at three nationals every year.
Right. Right,
and we should have you out. He gets all the old bikes and everything, and Stanton does it. You know, Glover, DeCoster did it. Man, we should get you out to Mount Morris.
It seems like they mentioned it to me. I don't know, a couple of times, and I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know if I don't remember.
Would you do it?
Oh yeah, I would do it in a second. But I don't remember what happened. I don't know if I had a monster event going on or if it was just if I had something else going on that I couldn't do it. But I'd love to do it. I saw the pictures and stuff of it. And, you know, I remember somebody asking me about it, but I just don't remember what happened.
Yeah, we'll work on that. I'll stay in touch with you. And I work closely with Rob, and we'll try to get you out there for sure.
Yeah, let's do that. I know.
Dude, the fans would lose it at Mount Morris.
What's that?
The
yeah.
The fans would lose it.
Oh, I would. You know, and I think this year, I think when Mount Morris is going on, I think I'm actually in Europe, which is kind of a bummer.
Oh,
I don't know if we could pick out another event.
Red Bud.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'm supposed to be in Europe all of June doing monster stuff. So
now I worked at Yamaha for 4 years as Ferry's mechanic, as a lot of people know, and John R. was there, Bob Oliver was there, and I think they got tired of me just grilling them about you and your your stories and the testing and anything that you did.
Yeah.
We got to a point where Bob would just tell me, listen, just call him yourself, you know?
Call him Mom Ned.
We literally had parts upstairs in our little thing that still said Bradshaw on them, you know, like some motors
some
frames, and I'm just like, oh, Bradshaw.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was probably Bob or John R., and I remember when you were there, and I would see those guys occasionally. I don't see them a whole lot. Yeah. I know the last time I saw John R. was his retirement party. I actually flew down to that, so it was kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah, I was there. I don't remember you there being there, but I
should. Yeah, we were there. We were keeping it kind of quiet in the corner, I guess.
Yeah, and then and Bob would just be like, Bob really liked you. He was always like, you know, just because you were kind of a straight shooter, I guess, and he is too, so.
Oh, yeah, he definitely is. No, Bob was a good guy, man. He knew how to make one run.
Oh,
I know
a
couple of times we bucked heads a couple of times. He'd be saying, the dino says this, and you say this, and, so-and-so says this, and I'd be, well, I don't give a damn what the dino says, and I don't care what whoever says, and if it's, you know, Jeff, meaning Emig, or somebody, or whatever. I said, I don't care. I said, this is what I want. And so we'd go back and forwards, and then finally we'd try it, and he'd put it on there, and I'd go, where has that been? Why have I been riding my butt off all day? It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I've been riding since 8:30, and I'm tired. And it takes till now for you to put this on my bike, and it's bitching, okay? And then my other deal was, okay, it's good. Don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Wrap it in cellophane. Put it in the truck. It's ready for Anaheim.
Yeah,
don't mess with it. Oh, no. And then most of the time it was John R., just one more. Just one more. Just one more shot. One more. And then finally, you know, it'd get to the point to where I'd come in and they'd turn their head, man. I'd be around the corner coming off of my gear going, that's it. No one more.
Yeah, no one. That's funny because I honestly, the same thing happened with Chad. Chad would just be like, I'm out of here. No more one more is John R.
Yeah,
I swear to God, the exact same thing happened.
If there was lights, I know we'd have been riding there a lot in the lights.
Now, I got to ask you about this story, and I don't even know if it's true, but this was a classic one that I think John R. told me. You guys went to Hangtown for testing, and you never liked Hangtown. And even back then, it was a horrible track when I first started the Nationals.
Yeah.
It's gotten a lot better, but you guys were testing out there. You rented the track. A guy comes up from the track, says, you know, hey, we did this and this to the track, and what do you think? And you were like, you said, you know what, the number one thing you could do to improve this track? And the guy was like, no, you know, what is it? And you said, hang a clothes sign at the front gate.
I did.
Is that true?
Oh, I did. I did, man. I remember it. You know, there's a lot of things I don't remember, but I remember distinctively sitting there and saying that. I think we were, we might have even had box vans.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
It may have been that long ago, because I think I remember sitting on the back of the deal and the guy riding up on a motorcycle or a moped or something and saying that, and it. I mean, it was terrible. And the thing was, is I always usually did pretty well there. I mean, I always had good luck there. I think I won there one year and got a second. So I did well there, but I just didn't like the place. And then I really didn't like it. One time I freaking slammed myself on one of the real fast, I don't know, going across the middle of the track really fast. But
well, the dirt used to be as hard as, I don't know if you, well, yeah, you've been there because that's where I first met you. It's a lot softer now. But when you did it, man, it was concrete, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, there were stories before that I think it was even worse. I mean, I remember Dubok always liked that place, but he was kind of a Carlsbad kind of guy. And so when he went there, he was loving it, wind blowing and hard slick. And
well, I'm glad to confirm that story is true because
that
was just hilarious. We were loving
that
one.
Was. I think I probably said that more than once, but that one was the best.
That one is it, huh? So do you follow the current Supercross series much?
You know, I don't. I occasionally, my wife talks to Kevin Windham's wife periodically, and so I kind of know a little bit what's going there, but I don't watch TV, basically, period. I mean, I watch UFC, so I'll probably watch TV Saturday night, but that's I just never watch TV, and I hear people, I have friends, and, you know, every once in a while some magazines will come across the table, and I'll open it up and, you know, catch up for 30 minutes or so, but I stay so busy doing other stuff, and I have a hard time sitting still is my problem. That's part of the reason I want to go start riding this motorcycle is I think it'll eat up some of my, maybe I'll sit still. But it's here in the last probably couple of weeks, knowing Vegas is coming around here, and with the U.S. Air Force being my primary sponsor with the Monster stuff, they also sponsor Supercross. And so a couple of those guys that were at our banquet here a few weeks ago in Vegas, they're going to the final in Vegas, and so they asked me, you know, would I come, and I go, you know, I hadn't really thought about it, but so I think I'm actually going to go to Vegas, so it'll be kind of cool. And then I know with, you know, the things that have changed in the points chase, it should be interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's coming down to the wire, so hopefully you can make it.
I would like to.
So this goes back to the podcast vote where you won. All these years later, I mean, you don't really have any championships, a lot of race wins, the regional championship 125s. But people still love you. People still talk about you being their favorite rider. If we were to go through their pro pits, I think you'd probably win for favorite childhood rider.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think that is? What did it?
You know, I don't know. I just always thought that I wanted to stay the person that I always was, growing up, amateur ranks, whatever. And I'm sure you can't keep everybody happy, and I'm sure there's people that say, you know, oh, he changed or this or that. But I just wanted to be the same guy, and I wanted to know that basically if it wasn't for the fans, we wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was times to where, you'd be angry after a race or this or that, and you didn't want to hang around, and I wouldn't. And there was times to where I would, and, you know, I know a many a nights after Supercrosses and a many a days after Outdoor Nationals that I sit there until the very last person was gone out of those pits that didn't want to, you know, talk to me or see me or get an autograph, whether it was behind a box fan or at a semi. And I still, you know, try to be that way, probably even more so now than even I was then. And I devote a lot to the fans. And again, even more now with what I'm doing with the Monster stuff. I mean, we do hours and hours and hours and hours of autographs, and I really see what it means to those people, so it makes me feel even better from riding years.
Yeah. What percentage of those people at the Monster Trucks know about your past?
It's changed even more so this year. My very first year, first few events, nobody really knew. And now, like at Vegas this year, I mean, I had tons of people that come through the line that, now they're my age or a little bit older, and they have kids that are, you know, 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And so their dad's telling their son about me. And a few of the kids look at you and their eyes, you know, brighten up. And then there's a few of them look and go, you know, who is this? Who cares? Whatever, you know. They're thinking, you know, Travis or, you know, a lot of the new guys. Yeah. And so it's pretty cool, you know, to see people cross over and for them to come and see something else that I'm doing that I really like. You know, it's fun. It's a new challenge.
Yeah, I mean, even I can think of this. Jason Thomas, do you know who he is? The pro
right, runner. I do.
He's got your jersey on his wall. I mean, the guy's like a professional rider. He's like 27
right.
years old. He's got a Bradshaw 4 on his wall.
Oh, that's
I mean,
cool.
That's just another example, you know, some guy that's just really.
I hear, you know, that from some of the younger guys, and it makes you feel pretty good because, I mean, I can remember, you know, a lot of the older guys that are a lot older than me. Remember watching them back in the day, and simple little things that they did made me, I guess, you know, a fan or whatever the heck you want to call it. But now, you know, looking back to those days when I was a kid watching them do something at a racetrack, whether it was something they said or something they did on the motorcycle, made me never forget them. So I, you know, going back to, I guess, what makes the people remember you, I don't know. It was just me. You know, it was never an act. I always liked being different. I always liked saying what I felt when I felt it, whether it was good, bad, or different. At times it wasn't the right thing, but that was just me.
Yeah.
Like I said, you don't make everybody happy, but, you know, the ones that are seems like they're still out there. And so it makes me almost feel like, because, you know, when I was done racing, I didn't do the farewell tour and all the stuff that a lot of the guys have done, but it was pretty cool because it gave them that last year of racing that, you know, hey, you know, letting the fans know that I don't plan on, you know, being around near what I used to be. So it makes me want to be involved in some way now, you know, that I'm older and regardless of what it is, whether it's within the industry or with a team or something, but I've actually in the last, I don't know, few weeks or even year thought about maybe trying to get involved and to see some of those fans that are still around the races again.
Yeah, I told the same thing to Yogi last year because Yogi just disappeared and has a ton of fans. And he really, I mean, you know, he appreciates the fans, but he has no desire, no anything to get back into it at all. And I'm like, Yogi, one day you're going to look back on it and you're going to realize that people love you, you know, like they want you around, you know.
Right, so. Right. And I'm, I don't know, I think I'd like to think, and you know, I do, that I'm pretty modest about all of whatever, whether it's been success or luck or whatever the heck you want to call it. But I, you know, you even as long as I've been out of it, you look back at some of that stuff and you think about it inside. And again, you know, like you said, whether it's younger riders or fans, but it makes you feel pretty good that you're able to put that kind of imprint on somebody just by being yourself and being a racer at heart and wanting to do whatever it took to win. You know, I know I wasn't always the most physically shaped person, but man, I think I wanted to win worse than anybody out there, and I would try to do everything it took to do that, and that's just the way I've always been, you know.
Now, this being a Canadian thing, I have to ask you, Toronto Supercross 1989, 16 years old, 15?
I think it was 15.
15.
I was 15 because it was before I had turned 16.
Okay, and you split the wins with LaRocco, I believe. It was a two-nighter.
Vaguely remember that.
I was going to ask you about that. Was that the second time, maybe?
I think that was the second time that I split wins with him, because I think the first time I was the only guy that was there, because it was. I remember racing against Ross.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about Rollerball.
Yeah, that was... But, yeah, that was the first year. I think it was – I don't think it was 89. I think that was the second time I was there.
88 would have been
there? Yeah, I think so. I'm usually pretty good with those dates, and I know there's two guys there in Canada that would know for sure because they were in charge of bringing me up there. I know I went up there with Don Valley North Toyota.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was several guys in charge of getting me up there, but –
What do you remember about 88 when you were 15 and you beat Rollerball, who probably was three times your size?
Oh, yeah, at least. That was like racing against Mike Jones in the States. I remember, you know, going there just like having no idea what to expect because I, you know, hadn't rode Supercross, you know, other than just a little bit of practicing and on smaller stuff. But then I remember getting there and everything was tabletops.
Yeah.
And the tabletops were built across flatbed truck trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I just remember really long tabletops, and I do remember it being rutty. And I don't know, I always seemed to do well in the ruts for whatever reason. And I remember being intimidated for sure by Ross because I know I had seen him down in the States even when I was younger. So, but it just one of those deals that went my way at a young age that – You never forget, never will forget.
Yeah, no, it was a real cool thing for all the fans, because I'm not from that part of Canada, but I have people who are like, I was there when Brasher won his first ever pro race, you know. And
it was, and then shortly after that was when I won Osaka.
In Japan, yeah.
Japan, yeah. Okay. So I was still, I had just turned 16 when I won that one. So the first one was there in Toronto. I was 15, and then Osaka was 16.
And you beat RJ and Ward and all those guys.
Yeah, that was crazy. It was a knockdown dragout in itself.
Was it?
Yeah, and I was on the receiving end for a change. I don't particularly like it. I'd like to have my chance at running into Ricky again. But anyways, he ran into me pretty much the whole race. I mean, I just remember him freaking banging me in every different... And the track was very hard to pass on. It was ruddy, and there wasn't a lot of lines to choose from. And, you know, I was just staying in the groove and doing everything I could. I mean, I was like, I couldn't believe I was there. And every lap clicked off, I was like, holy crap, man, I'm getting closer and closer to the end of this thing. I'm still leading and da-da-da. But I remember the last couple corners, he ran into me freaking pretty hard. He left marks off of the off of the bottom of the handlebars in the top of my head because I'd be in the corner laid over and he'd just come in there and whack, you know.
But, wow.
And it was funny, you know. We're standing on the podium and I had Rick, me and Ricky had been friends for a long time. I mean, he'd spent time at the house when I was younger. Obviously, he was riding 250s with Yamaha back then, and so I'd known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I remember him calling me little shit, you know, up on the deal. And he says the only one problem with winning, he says, now when you don't, everybody's going to ask you what happened. And he was right. He was exactly right. You know, whether it was calling home to tell my dad or somebody ask how you did, and it's, well, I got this or that. Well, what happened?
Yeah.
You know, you're expected to win every time after that.
Yeah. You were like, oh, and especially you being so early and young, you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a true meaning about winning early on, and you know, but it just kind of happened, I guess.
I was just thinking you probably ran into Ross a bunch in the Florida Winter Series too.
Yep, exactly, during the Winter Am and stuff.
All the Canadians would go down there and race, but
yeah, that was a lot of fun. I missed that. You know, as time went on, we ended up doing the Golden State and then really not going back down to Florida. But I used to love going to Florida and doing the Winter Am and getting a ride at Kroom. And I don't know, I miss. It was kind of funny. It's two opposite ends of the country, but I always said that I was either going to live out this direction, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, or I was going to live in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up out west.
So there you go. Now, at the risk of you maybe hanging the phone up, but L.A. Coliseum, 92, what went wrong years later?
Just a bad night.
Yeah.
You know, just a completely bad night. You know, I rode bad. You know, nerves were obviously crazy, and I had always done well under pressure, and there was a ton of pressure there. I mean, like no other, you know, coming up possibly to win my first championship, and it was early on, and I just rode bad, screwed up, and nobody to blame or anything to blame.
Yeah.
You know, and
I blame the riots.
Blame the riots.
I blame the riots because they pushed that race back, and it was in the daytime, and they screwed up with your system.
Yeah, you know, I would sure like to blame it on something. I never thought of that. But no, I just really rode bad. I was completely off that night. You know, I had everything, and I never liked having everything to lose. I always liked having everything to gain, and I think that was the reason I feel that I was successful early on in my career, was because there wasn't, I mean, you know, expectations built as my career went on, mm-hmm. but early on, I had everything to gain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was racing against, you know, guys, Jeff Ford, you know, and Ricky and Johnny O'Mara, and, you know, the list is on, and Jeff and, you know, Stanton and Bale and those guys, and, you know, I was a lot younger than those guys and had everything to gain. So, but there, it was just, I don't know, bad night. And, you know, and I don't know that it changed my career. It was definitely I don't know what the word is, but mentally, you know, it was tough to swallow.
So, okay, so you almost win the title in 92. You're definitely the fastest guy in 1992. 93 comes out, and, I mean, you win two Supercrosses. You're fourth in the points in Supercross. Was it a case of McGrath just stepping it up? Or, I mean, was the 92 race, were you just not the same guy anymore?
I think Jeremy, you know, definitely stepped it up. And I had never had an injury in my career that took me off of the bike as long as it did after the Coliseum. Because when we red bud before the Coliseum, mm-hmm. I had completely tore my ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rode the Coliseum with a torn ACL, which wasn't the reason I didn't win the championship. I mean, I had a knot in the back of my leg the size of a baseball that I couldn't lock my leg out, but I was fine. Now, whether it was on my mind or whatever, no excuses. After that, I obviously went on break for, golly, I don't know what that took, 4 months. I'd never been off the motorcycle in my entire life since I'd started riding that long. I'd never had that kind of injury before, and a chance to do things that I had never done as a kid, meaning just relax and not have anything I had to do and discover that there was another part of life, whether it was good, bad, or different. And so in order to come back after that and to get rolling again was tough. And I was really motivated to do it because at that time, you never really saw many guys go away from a major injury. At that time, that was a major injury. Now you're in and out surgery.
Yeah.
And come back from it. You know, there was no, you know, Doug Henry, you know, type injuries to come back and win a championship. And so that motivated me to come back. I wanted to come back and be mean and come back and win and change that, mm-hmm. hey, you know what, a guy can come back from a major injury. And that just didn't work out for me. You know, I mean, I won a couple of races, and no doubt that Jeremy, you know, stepped the thing up a little bit. But just kind of the way it ended up, I guess.
Now, when you decided to retire, was there one thing that happened? I mean, because you still had years on your contract left, and
yes.
According to Keith McCarty, they were paying you a whole lot of money. And
I mean,
I heard about that too. But was there one thing that happened that you were just like, "Hey, I'm over it," or was it just a sort of your heart just wasn't into it?
You know, it got to the point to where I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be at the race. I didn't want to leave home. The hardest part was for me was leaving home. And I don't blame it on it, but it was definitely that time that I had off that I got to stay at home, man. I got to be on the lake, and, you know, I got to enjoy my life, and I didn't have somebody scheduling me to be somewhere. Like, had pretty much been that way since I was, 11 years old. And, you know, I mean, I was getting on the airlines at 11 and flying and doing testing, and not that I would go back and regret any of it, but it was like that 4 months, man. I wake up in the morning, shit, this is pretty cool. I'm going to go do this or this or go out on the lake, or I'm going to do absolutely nothing. I'm going to cut my grass. It got to the point to where I didn't want to leave home. And once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. And I knew that people were starting to recognize that. And I felt like that I was letting sponsors down, letting fans down. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to sandbag and collect a paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, dude, you could have wrote it out.
And you know, I look back on it now going, man, I should have probably just continued to ride and continue to accept the paycheck, and I'd have more in my retirement now. But that's not me, you know, and I wouldn't go back and do it again. If I wasn't going to give 100% and didn't feel like it mentally that I was there, I'm not going to take their money, you know. And that was what I said in my meeting. I told them I wanted to have a meeting at the big table, and so we did. And I said, man, I'm just not in it. I'm not going to, you know, do this to you guys especially. And I said, I know I have 4 years left on my contract, but I'm done. I need to get away. And, you know, I had, you know, personal issues going on at the time. And so everything added up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just to the point, man, where I was about to bust. And I said, I've had enough. I can't handle any more. I'm out. And they were like, well, you know, well, what do you want to do? You know, do you want to stay in the industry? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? I mean, they gave me every option.
Yeah, like, how did they take it? Like, how were they, like, totally caught off guard? You were just like,
no,
you dropped the bomb on them?
No, they weren't. I mean, I think they knew something was coming because they knew me well enough.
Yeah.
I've been with those guys since I was, I think seven, somewhere in that age, give or take a couple years, either way.
And this would be Larry
older.
Griffiths and Keith, I'm sure.
Cliff Lett, who was Ricky Johnson's mechanic, ended up being Ricky Johnson's mechanic later on, actually gave me my first help from Yamaha, and we were in Brownsville, Pennsylvania at an amateur national. And so from then I knew all those guys. I had known Keith forever, and so those guys knew me, man. They, you know, when I would show up at the track on the weekends, I was always, when I walked up, walked into the semi or walked into those box vans or whatever, everybody looked at me and looked at my facial expression to see what the weekend was going to be like. And, you know, when I was winning, we won 10 events or whatever in the 1 year, and everything was going good. I mean, everybody was smiling, and results make people smile. And obviously, and team doing well makes people smile. And so it got to that point, man, to where nobody was smiling, and I definitely wasn't smiling. I said, man, I'm not only, you know, unhappy myself, but I'm making a lot of other people unhappy. And I said, I'm not going to roll that way. It's time to do something different. And so I needed a break. So they really weren't caught off guard. I mean, I think they knew it. They respected me, I hope, for doing it. And I said, they, you know, basically left the door open, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, I just need to get away. I need to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go, you know. I said, now, I'm not saying that I will never ride again or come back. I said, but if I do, you guys will be the first that I call.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what it ended up being. It ended up being two full seasons
I
didn't ride. I think I rode the tail end of one season. And it was. I just needed that little bit of a break. And, you know, I never came back to be the Damon of old, but I came back with very good intentions. And, you know, when they were there, you know, they opened their arms for me again. And, you know, I think we had, you know, a decent year that year. It wasn't a winning deal for sure.
The outdoors in 95, you mean, or the 96 season?
Let's see. So it must have been 93.
You came back for,
right, because I didn't ride 94, and then I rode just the tail end of 95, and then so I rode with Yamaha in 90, the full year in 96, kind of was my full season again.
I actually have it down here. You came out in 96. I think you got a second and a third of the first two Supercrosses.
Right,
a second and a fourth, anyways.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was pretty cool to to have been gone and come back, and that really motivated me. I mean, it made me hungry again. I was probably training harder than I ever had just because I wanted to come back and do really well. And that particular year, I think it started out good, and through 96 wasn't so good through the middle of the season, and then towards the end of the season, it was like things picked up. And I don't know if you have – I'll probably answer several questions for you through on out here, but you know, the end of that 96 season, I think at Washougal, I had probably one of the best rides I'd had all year. I mean, I came from clearing the hell from the rear to the front, and it all happened towards the end. And I
was there that day. You were killing it in the whoops.
It was one of those days, you know, I was on. And it probably took me that long to get back to where I really needed to be, because you can be away and ride and train all you want. Mm-hmm. But until you go racing, you know, that's the real deal. You can train and have lap times or whatever you want to be, but you got to be able to go racing. And so that day was a really good day. And probably a week or two before that, Keith had told me that, hey, if you're happy with contract, you know, we're happy. We just need to get the paperwork and get you to sign. And mm-hmm. really didn't have anything to go with them and say, hey, you know, I need to be paid more money. I did this, and this. It wasn't that. It was, you know, I still wanted to get back on my feet. So I said, hey, that's cool. Let's get it signed up. I want to continue racing. And so I kind of went on that. Then right after Washougal, which I thought was one of the best rides all year, I get a phone call. Hey, these guys decided not to renew your contract from mm-hmm. Keith. And I go, really? You know, I was totally shocked.
Right.
And I was like, God dang, you know, okay, well, what did I do? Well, I don't know. Just decided not to renew it. So no, that's it. You know, no, this. Okay, I'd like to fix something if I did something wrong.
Yeah.
Only been with this company my entire life. Very, 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 very loyal to them. Could have left several times.
Yeah, did you have offers
money
back in the day? Like when you were, did you have some big offers when you
oh,
were?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Yamaha either always matched or got close.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of offers to go a lot of other places for, you know, a lot of money, and I didn't, because I always felt that being loyal was just the way it should be, and that's the way I was raised, and that's the way I continued throughout my career. And I think there was a lot of times that it's paid off for me, and a few that it hadn't. But so, you know, I was like, well, okay, you know, I guess I ride the last race or whatever, and end of story. So I got off the phone with him, and I was pissed, man. I could have ripped somebody's head off. And so I actually talked to, at that time I was seeing Hannah quite a bit, talking to him. And so I called him and, you know, and kind of told him, and he, you know, gave me a little bit of advice. So I was probably mad for about 30 minutes. And I said, all right. And so I sit down and thought, like, all right, I'll call Jim Hale. So I called Jim, and that's when we went to work on Manchester Honda. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was just a killer deal. I mean, it was probably other than my arena cross stuff and the years that I was doing a lot of winning with Yamaha, was probably one of my funnest, most memorable
really?
Years riding. And the reason it was because I had a lot to do with putting it together, mm-hmm. along with Jim and Manchester Honda and, you know, American Honda. I mean, they helped us with, you know, parts and, you know, to get, you know, some decent bikes. That was the year in 97 that nobody wanted to ride the Honda. And I was like, hey, I don't mind being the underdog guy. I'll try it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we did. And we didn't set the world on fire. We were able to win an event and do decent in a couple of Supercrosses. But it was really fun. And Jim, I remember making the comment, you know, he says, you know, he goes, it really doesn't matter how we do. It's that, you know, you're happy and we're having fun. He goes, the people like it. I like it. So let's just have fun. And that's what we did. And mm-hmm. I wanted to go testing. I went testing. I wanted to drive the semi down the road. I drove the semi down the road. I wanted to fly. I flew. So it was just awesome. And the first year, what I wanted to do was, the first year, I really didn't care if I made any money. I just mm-hmm. wanted to put this thing together. The second year, I wanted to add, you know, maybe another rider or so, and I wanted to make some decent money, because the risk was there, or I could go home and collect my retirement and, you know, be happy. So, you know, it came time for the second year, and we just couldn't quite get numbers to where I wanted them to be for the work and the effort And I wasn't disappointed. I mean, Jim tried. He put a hell of a lot of effort into it, and so did I and other people, and we just couldn't get the numbers to where I wanted them to feel like it was worth the risk.
You were like maybe 5 years too early, do you know what I mean, for that sort of team, like a Rocco thing or whatever. You know?
Yeah, and so I just, and which I think, you know, obviously that same year, you know, Ziggy at Factory Connection was a huge part of that team.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously now, you know, he's one of the major players in the sport, and so it's pretty cool. I felt like I had a part in that, you know, a little bit, but I think you know, I have to rewind a little bit, and I probably will catch back. I don't know how long we got here, but talk about the arena cross stuff. But I always look back to the year that I got burnt out and said I'd had enough and had to go away. It was one of those decisions where I said, you know, I've either got to buy a motorhome and I've got to stay out on the road, or I've got to buy an airplane that I can hire a pilot and fly back and forwards. I'm sick of the airlines. I'm sick of the bags. Just, you know, that kind of stuff just bothered
me. Sure,
Hannah
was pumping you full of info for that, too, you know?
Well, at the time, he wasn't an aircraft broker, so, which
okay.
Now, if that was now, yeah, I'd probably own one, didn't even need one. But, so, yeah, that was something I needed to, you know, I probably should have done. I think I would have raced another 10 years because once I got a taste of that with the Manchester deal, and then when I went on to do the arena cross and did that, bought the motorhome.
That was kind of your own deal, right? The arena cross team was all you and
yes,
and on the road.
Again, it was one of the funnest times in racing. It was almost like going back to amateur days. And I guess in a sense, it kind of was. You know, a lot of people didn't want to go and do arena cross because, quote, it wasn't the big show. But there was a lot of money to be made in that series.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was going to be very profitable for me that year and put together a sweet deal with Yamaha. I mean, you know, we kind of had bitter blood there, obviously, when I left. I mean, I was very, very bitter at them for several years. And several of the people that worked there won't name any names.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Actually, I will say that none of them are still at Yamaha.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but you know, when I went to them and said, "This is what I want to do. This is what I want." They were like open arms. I mean, it was like a reunion of a family that had been apart for several years, and so it was cool, man. I put it all together. I was heavily involved.
And you would have won that title. But
you know,
I
felt like I was on my way. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from Josh because that year he was tough. You know, he had his he had his head bolting on his shoulders, right, and was very tough. So I don't take that away from him. But you know, the Yamaha deal and all the other sponsors, I had involvement in all of it. And that's one thing I never liked doing, and I still don't to this day. I don't like having to call a sponsor and sell myself to them.
Right.
You know, I'm a performer, man. I want to go out and do the job on the track or whatever it is and let somebody else do the talk. I just want to go do my job, you know. But that particular year, I had to because I wasn't going to pay somebody to go and do it for me. And so I just kind of got involved and put it together, and it was awesome. It just kind of sucked that it ended halfway through the deal by getting hurt.
Where does that crash in the arena cross rank in your all-time crashes?
as far as the worst injury... It was by far my worst injury, by far.
But, I mean, even the crash was horrid-looking.
Yeah, you know, and so, I know I've ragdolled before and spanked my head on the ground and rolled, you know, ever how far, but, you know, I've only watched that crash up until the point before I hit the ground.
Yeah.
That's as far as I've ever watched it.
Probably a good idea.
And, you know, it's sad to say, but it was a whole new meaning to pain. I mean, there's guys out there now that have... obviously had a lot worse, but I'm gonna tell you what, that was some of the worst pain I'd ever dealt with in my life. And you know, now it sucks because I mean, you think your pain tolerance is I really doesn't matter now. I don't think anything. I mean, mentally, yes, something could hurt me that bad. You know, something my kids or my wife, or my family, or something. But as far as physically pain, shit.
No way, huh?
I feel like I could walk through a mile of fire. But yeah, and that was the bummer. You know, of getting hurt and having it basically end. You know, kind of in my career to speak of with that. And I guess it's more doubt. You know, now I mean it was broken so bad. you know, that there was not anything to put back together.
Really?
You know, bone grafts and, you know, all the steel and crap. But it was, what was so bad was that it ended me from an injury. And I had never been ended from an injury. I was ended because I wanted to be. And so it's totally, totally different. And RJ told me that way back in the day when he did his wrist in. He said, man, that's the worst thing in the world, to be ended by an injury. And I'd never really thought much about it, because I remember when I was riding before and we were so busy going to Europe and, you know, all the races in the United States and whatever. If you were in the championship hunt, it sucked and you were mad. Mm-hmm. But if you got hurt and you were out of the championship hunt and you went home, it was like, whew, you could take a deep breath. You know, it sucks being hurt, but I've got a couple weeks here to rest and regroup. And when I got hurt doing that arena cross thing, man, I was pissed. And we'd been hammering on it for a couple of months, you know, on the road, but we're having so much fun, and it just it sucked to end it that way. So it makes me want to ride a national now, just talking about it.
Well, hey, what was ever behind the Factory Connection Daytona Supercross comeback of some sort?
You know, I really don't know.
I was very excited that day. I was working for Kelly Smith at KTM, and I could barely watch him. I was like, oh, Bradshaw's back.
You know, I don't even know. That deal happened so damn fast.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it felt like it was a little sideways and this. I don't even know how I got myself into it.
Okay, fair.
I really don't. I was, you know, unprepared, and I don't even know. I look back on it, and it's like, you know, it would have been pretty cool if we just looked at it as a publicity stunt. You know, but I don't really know. And the funny thing is I don't remember a whole hell of a lot about it. I mean, I do very vaguely, but it just was not one of those things that stuck in my head. I don't know why.
This might be a hard question for you, but do you have a favorite race or races of all time? I mean, was there a day that you just – I like asking all of the older guys this because, you know, they usually have something that they remember that they were just on.
You know, I felt like I had many. But ones, I guess, I don't know, that really pop into my head was, and I probably don't know the year, but I know there were several of them at Mount Morris.
Mm-hmm.
I love that place. And everybody, you know, always made the comment, well, that's his backyard, you know. Well, it was my backyard. I rode there once a year just like everybody else.
Really? People made that comment?
Oh, God, yeah. They thought, I think they thought I practiced there and tested there, but I never rode there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I rode there once a year just like everybody else. But I love that track. I like the fans there. It just suited my style. And so I always loved, you know, going there. And I know I had some killer battles there with Stanton, and even in the 125 days with, you know, Donnie Schmidt and, you know, a couple of other guys that I don't, you know, I remember George Holland. But, and then, you know, a couple of Supercrosses, and I remember one for some reason, Houston, one year, I don't remember what year, but I was sick. I mean, sicker than, you know, just sick, you know, not throwing up sick, but like flu sick. No energy, you know, didn't ride the week before, barely rode practice, and just struggling. And come out in the main event and just ride flawless and not even really push and win. And for some reason, I always thought, man, it's not all bad to be sick, because you're not very nervous, because you feel like, hell, I just want to get through the night. And then it just happened like that. You know, you ride probably the best you've ever rode. And so, I don't know, a couple of those kind of stick. I mean, I'm sure there's, every time I think about that question, other races pop into my head.
Yeah, and you start thinking, well, wait, there was that one and there was this one.
Yeah, so there seem like to be a lot of them.
Do we have much more time, or you got to go?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I don't even know what time it is, man.
It's five, your time.
Yeah, I'm good.
Did you physically really hate Jeff Matasevich and those guys? I mean...
Yes.
I mean, was...
Yes, and still do.
Okay, so, I mean, off the track, it wasn't one of those things where... Because you guys all, I mean, you know, you went to the same restaurants to eat if you're...
Yeah, no.
I mean, you hated the guy.
Yep. All right. And I haven't... I don't know where he's at or what, or seen him in years, but I just, for some reason, I just, you know, and we did, I mean, we, you know, in the younger days, because Jeff was a little bit ahead of me when it, you know, in the mini bike stuff, you know, we talked, but it was, I don't know, man, I just, this wasn't wasn't my type of dude, you know. But I don't think I can think of any. I mean, there are several guys that I didn't like. And pretty much at that time, I didn't like anybody. I hated every single one of them. And
that's what Bob Oliver said, too.
Yeah, except for the guys that were on my team. And occasionally, I didn't even like Emick.
Yeah.
But we were on the same team, so I had to. But, no, I just, you know, like Dubok and those guys, I mean, those years racing there were, you know, they were my buddies, and they were the only ones.
Wow. I talked to Dubok one time about his San Jose win, and he said that had it been another lap, you would have punted him into the...
I was working on it.
He goes, this guy has so many wins, and he won't even, you know, he was not going to let me win that race.
No, hell. I'd come from not only getting stuck in the gate, but yeah. They tried to stop me when I went across the starting line because they were already coming around the other way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I remember the official standing out there trying to flag me down. I was like, hell no, I got room, baby. I'm going for it. So, you know, but anyways.
Was there any battles with anybody that you were looking back on it that you were like, wow, I really hit that guy hard or I really.
Oh, yeah. There was times that it was, you know, there was a few times the chicken that were pretty, you know, that were for sure.
Yeah.
But there were times that people accused me of it that weren't. And one that I remember was one year in it was either Anaheim or San Diego. I'm thinking it was Anaheim, early Anaheim, where we were going through the whoops. And I got off the back of the bike, and I got on the throttle, and I couldn't get back off the throttle. And it was just, bah, bah, you know,
oh,
jumping.
Yeah. That's a highlight one, yeah.
And it hit the whoops on the rear tire and basically jumped on top of Chicken. And they said, yeah, he for sure threw his bike on him. Hell no, I was just trying to get under control of my bike. And wanted to really, at certain times, try to race with him the way I always, and I always tried to do that, whether it was, you know, Kiedrowski or any of those guys, I always wanted to race with them just like I did Stanton because it was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And not to, I guess, go forward, but Josh Demuth was one of those guys that I could race with like I raced with Stanton. Probably only, you know, other than somebody like Dubok.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, me and Dubok had, you know, races at times or whatever, but and tested many hours together. But Josh Demuth was like that. I mean, we could race so close and tight in that Arena Cross Series. Again, that was something that made it pretty fun.
Yeah, that's funny because I just did a story for a little thing we have on our internet, RacerX Canada, called Best Races, and it was with Demuth. I saw him last weekend, and he named off the whole series with you and him.
Yeah.
And he said the exact same thing. He said he was like, Damon was like my hero, and I raced him hard, but we were clean, and they were just great battles every weekend.
Yeah, it was. It was really cool to race with him because I didn't fear my legs getting broke. You know, on an accident or on a purpose deal, like a lot of the other guys that were in that series, because that series was always known as the frickin' Mike Jones Rollerball Series, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that, you know, and I thought I could play as dirty with the best of them as anybody, but I didn't want it to be that way. I wanted to be able to race fair, and a lot of the guys were young, and they didn't think about, man, we got a lot of races. We have a lot of races here, and you can really hurt somebody. You can ruin their career right here.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I was older and they were younger, so I was probably in that same position one day, and somebody was saying that about me. So.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Now, when I go home, I oftentimes, back home to Canada, I read old magazines, and it's kind of like what I enjoy doing is reading about the old days. But do you think you ever got an unfair shake from, like, say, Motocross Action, who was really the only magazine out then? Because it kind of comes across to me like that
and towards the end I definitely did. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because in the earlier years of career, they were very good to me. I mean, there was one year, I don't know how many covers I was on, four covers or something in one year or whatever. And everything that they said their magazine was true about me. And there was a turning point, and which I think they've done it to a lot of guys since then. I don't know about nowadays. It seems like maybe things have changed a little bit, but again, I don't read them that much. That they always, the guy that won a lot, that won, you know, a lot of races, at one point in time, Motocross Action bagged on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was early on. Well, there got to a point, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I was at Redbud the year that I tore my knee up before the Coliseum, the year I lost the championship. Me and Stanton were racing, and I was one of those days I was on, man. I was jacking with Jeff, and we, you know, that was his hometown, and that was probably the wrong place to be screwing with Jeff because the fans loved him, and they probably would have soon spit on me. But I was just on that day, just riding and having fun, and coming up the hill, just landed and threw me over the bars, and so I'm laying out there on the track, and I know my knees hurt. I can't get up, and it drugged my pants. When I crashed, it drugged my pants down to my knees.
Really?
And I'm standing there, yeah, I'm standing there in my underwear, and my pants down to my knees, and the people on the fence are, you know, hollering and booing and shit, and so I just sit down. You know, I'm yelling at them and probably sending obscenities to them, too, but so I sit down on the ground. Well, I saw a photographer down there taking pictures of me, and I knew he was a motocross action photographer, and so I started looking for rocks, and I started hurling rocks at him, and he's dodging, the lens and this and that, and I'm freaking wailing rocks. So needless to say, that didn't help me at motocross action.
No.
So it got so bad that guys would come to me and want to do interviews, and it got to the point that I would ask, what magazine are you with and who are you with? And if they said motocross action, I said, absolutely not. If you didn't know where the door was or how to get out of here, that's the way to go right there. I wouldn't do an interview with them. I said, because it doesn't matter. Whatever I say, Jody or somebody is going to change it, and that's the way it's going to get published. And I don't have a problem with putting in there if what I said was good, bad, or different, as long as it's true. I don't care. Put it in there. But they wouldn't do that. And I know shit got changed because I had, you know, had done interviews before I figured out I would never do another one with them, that it wasn't what I said. So then probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, Jeff Serwal from No Fear called me, and he's talking, and he goes, hey, he goes, would you do an interview with Motocross Action with John
Basher?
Yes,
yep.
With Basher.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I said, it's been a while. I said, I don't have a problem with men in fence with people or places or magazines or whatever,
yeah.
Which they were the only one. I said, sure. I said, you know, have him call me. I said, yeah, under a couple of stipulations. I said, but yes, have him call me. So make a long story short, you know, the big thing was, hey, before this is published, before it runs, I want to read the article.
Uh-huh.
And if it has changed whatsoever from what I said,
I'm going to kick your ass.
Well, not only you, I said, but there's going to be people coming to see me in prison. I said, so not, okay. And he agreed to that.
Yeah.
He came, and it was a good article. It was awesome. And so, you know, I've never had a problem with, you know, trying to repair things like that and going on. So, you know, that's all fixed now. So
yeah, that was just something that I really noticed because I must have picked up a few magazines from around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty harsh on you, and you know, it could be the California thing, but now I guess I understand you threw rocks at the guys. So
oh yeah, and it was funny because it was Mike Kroger, and he was a photographer. He worked for, you know, MXA at the time, and the year I did the Manchester Honda deal, he started working at Mechanics Wear,
mm-hmm.
doing something, and so I'm sitting up in the semi we had, and he comes up in the truck, and I go, I'm thinking to myself, and I don't know, I may have said, I said, what the hell are you doing in here? You know, I didn't forget that. I mean, I remembered it like it was yesterday.
Right.
And then I think shortly, right as he came in, they had planned this, and Jim comes in behind him, and, you know, we lay it all out on the table, and we talk about it, and, you know, I go, hey, man, I'm over it, and, you know, I got the real story, and so it was all cool, but it was just kind of funny how that happened. It was kind of a joke, but he did. He was working at Mechanics Wear, and, you know, and we talked and laughed about me throwing rocks at him. But.
Yeah. Funny story. My a real good friend of mine, and the guy I hung out with back on the road in 97 was Jason Furnett, a Canadian kid
uh-huh.
who actually got the ride, Robbie Skaggs' ride at Manchester for six races. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember his
name. He told me, you know, again, you know, being Damon Bradshaw, he was very excited, and he was really struggling because he rode Cowie 250s and he had to ride a Honda 125, but he wanted the chance. And anyways, he was asking you for advice one day. He told me that he was like, man, I just, you know, what am I doing? I'm really struggling. And you looked at him, you were like, you just need to go faster. He was like, that's my advice from Damon Bradshaw. You just need to go faster.
You just need to go faster.
Yeah,
well, you know, I used to make the comments to guys, especially that rode 125s, and I didn't ride 125s very long.
Mm-hmm.
I did the 1 year. And I remember riding that bike so hard that it hurt,
mm-hmm.
meaning whether it was every landing or going into every corner, I just remember riding it to the point it hurt. And I felt like at times, you know, that I was one of the fastest guys ever on a 125 when I was on. And I remember when I was, it was because, you know, that was a year I think Kudowski won the championship. I missed it by a couple points,
yeah.
Had a couple of bad races, and then I think the last race was Unadilla.
Yeah, Bob said that you had a win in the bag, and you got a rock in the knee or something, and you pulled off, and that cost you the title.
No.
No?
Well, no, it was a rock. It was a rock, but I think what happened was it was Red Bud,
mm-hmm.
and I was, again, I was jacking with somebody, and this might have been the other one that bit me in the ass, George Holland. I was racing with George Holland. He was on a Honda, and I was on a Yamaha, and again, that day I was on. I couldn't do anything wrong. And, I mean, I was passing him, and then I would wave him back by.
Really?
And then I would pass him again, and I would do it again. And, you know, and I wasn't really doing it because of George, because I liked him, and
yeah.
he was a stand-up guy. I was doing it because of Honda.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I couldn't stand those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't stand them. And so I would do it where they could see it. I'd do it in the mechanics area. And
too bad. Good thing the internet wasn't around back then.
You know, and then I would pass him. Well, then I remember coming around at the time my mechanic was Mike Chavez, one of the best mechanics I ever had. I come through the mechanics area, and he put on the chalkboard that there was 10 minutes left, time to quit playing. And so I go, okay. So I passed George and went to go away and landed off of a jump in the back, and when I landed right on a whoop.
Uh-huh.
And not in the whoop-de-doo section, but because the track was rough,
yeah.
and landed on a rock. And that rock caved the bottom of the pipe in where the bike wouldn't hardly pull itself up a hill.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm...
Maybe that
know.
Was it then, yeah.
And so I just had to idle around, and so it basically cost me 20-something points, even though I think I even had to stop. It wouldn't even run, and then I went across the finish line, so I lost, you know,
yeah.
a full round right there. And... So then I remember coming into and the other deal was after that, those guys walked by the pits. A couple of the Yamaha or Honda mechanics came out of the pits, and they were going, they had smart ass remarks. Oh, what happened to Dame and this and that being smart ass,
right.
And so that just made me even madder. So anyways, we get to Unadilla. I don't remember, and so I was struggling trying to get those points back. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
We got to Unadilla, and the only thing I could do was win both motos, and Kudrowski had to get two-thirds, if I remember this right. The first moto went perfect. I hole-shotted, went away. Mike LaRocco got second. Kudrowski got third. So we were on our way to doing what we needed to do. And if I remember correctly, the second moto, I hole-shotted, I'm gone, and LaRocco got a flat tire.
Oh.
If I remember right, he got a flat tire, so... That was, I think, Kudrowski beat me by two, maybe. But the Supercross season, I only won it by one or two. So it was kind of a trade-off. So, yeah, that was it was discouraging, but not really. Because, I mean, I knew that I was far the fastest guy, but it was one of those learning processes, you know.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of times where you could say that you were by far the fastest guy.
Yeah, I mean, back to that... the comment I made to was Jason. I remember telling a lot of kids on 125s. I said, if you're riding that bike so hard that it's hurting,
mm-hmm.
I said you're riding it probably as fast as you can. I said, so if you're doing that, I said through the bumps, through the braking bumps, through whatever, ride it till it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you'll be going fast.
But, yeah, he was waiting for you to like really get into it with him, as far as you know. Hey, I've been watching you, and you need to do this, and you just went, you need to go faster. What was your relationship like with JMB?
I guess very silent.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't talk to him. Didn't like him just because I raced against him, but respected
yeah.
him because he was very good. And really, he was, I don't know, my take on him was that he was very fast, and at times faster and smoother than all of us.
Mm-hmm.
If he could win without a fight, he was going to win. But if you put up a fight, he didn't want to play, he didn't want no part of it. And so I kind of knew that, and so that was the buttons that I tried to push. And, you know, it worked at times. You know, I know I won a lot against him, but I also was beat a lot against him. I was beat at times. And so, but that was just the way it was. If it was going to come easy for him, he was going to take it. And he looked like he was going nowhere, you know, because he was so
yeah.
smooth. But no, just never, a very silent kind of deal.
Never talked to him or nothing.
No. I remember running into him a few times, but
yeah.
that was probably the closest I ever got to him was on the bike.
Yeah, yeah. How frustrating was it for you on the riding the WR 500 when your competition was on these, let's say, a little bit better bikes?
You know, it was, I guess probably then it was a little bit frustrating. Not really, because it was kind of, again, it was kind of the underdog thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved being in that position.
I think you won a moto on it.
I did. I think, yeah. no, I won, I think I won Binghamton.
Did you win a race? Yeah.
I think I did. You know, by the way, the points fell. Mm-hmm. I won a moto and then got maybe a third or fourth,
yeah.
I think. But I'm not positive, but I think it did give me an overall there or something. And, but it was cool because I was the underdog. I was riding a freaking air-cooled bike that Brock Glover basically had rode.
Yeah.
And hadn't changed. The only thing he'd done is gotten heavier and uglier. So, yeah, but it was cool. I was glad I got to ride a 500. I always wanted to be able to do that, and it just worked out. But that's a true meaning of hurt, was riding that thing. I mean, I told John R. several times, I'm like, you know what? Why don't you just pull the shock out of the back of it and just put one of those rods in there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't change through the moto. It just sucks the entire time, and it doesn't change. And the only cool thing about the way it ran was it ran. It ran really good in the beginning, but
wow.
as she got hot, she would slow down a little bit.
Yeah, that's the Bob again, going back to Bob. He told me it would start out at 65 horsepower and probably end about 30.
But it was kind of cool because it beat you up so bad that by the end of the moto, you were glad that it slowed down.
Yeah.
but off the start, boy, she would run. But yeah, that was a wild deal. I remember it seems like we took like 16 or 17 pounds off of that bike, and it was just enduro stuff that we took off of it.
Yeah, so it really wasn't frustrating for you. You just were like, hey, I got to make the best of this.
Yep, exactly. It was. I mean, I remember going through turns on it, through chuck holes in a turn, just feeling like that there was no rear shock on it. And it wasn't John R.'s fault.
Yeah.
I think it was just the geometry of the bike. I don't care what you would have done. It was not going to work.
Yeah. Can you believe that Glover beat Bailey on a Works 500?
Oh, my gosh.
That one season?
Yeah, that just does not even make sense. I do remember him doing that, but I also remember him being really close to lapping him at several that I watched. I remember a couple at Mount Morris going, you know, and I remember being young and going, What's Brock doing? You know, what is he doing? You know, and David looked like Bale out there cruising around the track on the peg, just rah, 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 you know, and I'm thinking, you know, what is Brock doing? Well, little did I know I was going to get to find out several years later.
10 years later, you'll know exactly what
the
Brock
same felt. The same bike. The only difference, I think, in mine and his was that his was a works bike and that my tank was fatter than his was the only difference. And it was the same bike.
I mean, you never really raced an era of works bikes or anything like that either, so.
No, just missed it. I rode one works bike in Japan. Me and Emig went over one year and did a national.
250, two-stroke?
Yep, exactly. And it was perimeter frame. I mean, it was way, way early. I mean, it was probably, oh, gosh, man, real early 90s, 91, maybe even earlier than that. But it had a perimeter frame just like the bikes have now. More then it was more like a Honda frame was in 97, this particular Yamaha was, you know, aluminum tank, trick, lightweight, but did not have a motor at all.
No.
The motor was just very, and their bikes kind of always, you know, their riding style was different, and so I don't think they ask as much of their motors. And then not only, you know, we had Bob on our side, but it was an awesome bike to ride. I mean, it felt like you were riding a feather. It just didn't have good go.
Compare that to your WR500.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I was telling those guys. I said, man, I said, if we could have just took that motor and put, you know, and there was times where we thought about trying to put that motor in a 250 frame, but
yeah.
I forget. There were some rules that wouldn't let us do it, or
yeah.
McCarty didn't think it was a good idea, and he was probably telling me, don't be a sissy, just ride it, you know.
Yeah, you never did ride the 360, did you?
Just played on it.
Yeah.
Just played on it.
Never raced the Nationals on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
I don't know what would have been worse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I felt, you know, I look back on my career and think it's pretty cool, you know, because I was able to ride. I felt like I rode through a lot of eras, meaning mm-hmm. with different riders. I mean, clear back to, you know, I think I even raced once against Bob at Southwick. And, you know, so you think about that and then clear up to, I guess, kind of through, you know, Jeremy a little bit.
Yep.
But, and then I do remember one that I really like to always bring up. I do remember coming around when I was winning Mount Morris in the mud, and I was lapping Jeremy, and he was picking up his bike, and he couldn't even stand. He was having a hard time standing up. So he couldn't stand up in the mud, much less ride in the mud.
It was
actually kind of cool.
I was there that day. My rider didn't qualify for the motos, and I remember you passing Larry, you know, up the uphill double.
Oh, yeah, with no goggles.
Yeah, and the crowd freaking out. But I more remember you doing donuts and 360s in the rental car. I'm like, who is driving that thing? And
after the deal?
After the race. I'm like, who is this guy? And it was you. I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's all right then.
Well, see, that was my practice for what I'm doing now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I had practice for that. You know, they asked me what driving experience and I had, and I said, well, I got to give a lot of credit to Hertz and Avis.
How much longer for you in the monster trucks?
You mean how long do I think I'll do it?
Yeah, I like. What?
You know, I like it. I really like it. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, I like the show part of it, you know, that we go and the people are diehard fans. I mean, some of the craziest diehard fans that I've ever been around. And the reason I say that is, you know, a couple years ago in Vegas, it rained for 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
wind blowing, just colder than heck. And, the people did not leave. They waited till the rain quit so they could see the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be able to go to Jacksonville, places like that that hold, you know, 65 or 69,000 people, and it sell out a couple of days before, and they start tailgating a day before the event, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's neat. And then, you know, I mean, it's a thrill, and I still am amazed when I watch videos and look at pictures of what we do in the truck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you tell people, but, you know, I sit down with a couple of the guys, and I go, you know, people ask me about it all the time, and I tell them, I go, when you can take a 10,000-pound truck and jump it 30, 40 feet in the air, 140 to 150 feet, they go, they don't believe you. And I go, well, just come to one of our stadium events or go and look at this picture or watch this YouTube, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Are you pretty much just hanging on when you land? I mean, you're just trying to keep the wheel straight?
You're along for the ride. I mean,
yeah.
You're along for the ride, obviously, once you're in there, because every landing's a little bit different. You
right.
know, obviously, there's four tires, and, you know, if you land a little bit, you know, off camber or out of shape, the truck reacts different. So,
uh-huh.
you know, you jump, and when you leave the ground, depending on what the jump is, you know it's going to hurt like never have you ever felt in your life before. And so you land, and once you land, then after the recoil from that is when you start driving again, because
oh, yeah.
it hits.
Yeah.
And then when it lands again, then you just do what you can do to, and you always want those wild ones, you know, you want the truck to land and end up on two wheels and, you know, come almost to a rollover, because anybody can go out and roll a truck over. The fun part is to drive it right to that edge to where you almost rolled it, but you saved it.
Hmm.
And sometimes you can do that and sometimes you can't.
Wow.
So, but I love it. I mean, it's fun. Every time I leave to go to an event, I just can't wait to freestyle. And
yeah.
I thought that was going to be the hardest part of it for me because, you know, I had never done anything freestyle-wise on a motorcycle, meaning to have to come out and be creative and
yeah.
come off with tricks. And I really was focusing on racing, and then I got to where I just loved the freestyle part of it. So, But it hurts way worse than a motorcycle ever thought about.
Really,
so,
huh?
Wow. Yeah, it's like taking that WR500 and jumping let's see, what can I explain it? Probably jumping off the top of Saddleback and landing on flat ground on a WR500.
Maybe doing La Rocco's leap on it. I don't know.
Yes, exactly. Landing on flat ground.
So there's maybe no chance of you coming back as a rider coach or...
I have, and that's kind of what I said early on. You know, the last year or so, I've thought about it, of coming back and maybe trying to help a younger team, or you know, I would ultimately like to be at Yamaha just because I felt like I've been a part of that family for so long that if I could go back and I feel like I could be a help to some younger guys and even guys that are just slightly younger than me, because from having a different standpoint, you know, from a rider standing there, and I know a lot of things have changed and the bikes have changed, but...
Yeah, but I mean, Jeff does it, and he has everybody's respect, you know, over there.
Yeah, so I think I would like to do that. I mean, I may, you know, kick myself in the butt for not doing it sooner, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of age. You know, it makes a guy, you would think, a little bit more patient, but I don't really think I have any more patience than I did when I was 16. But But I think I could help, you know, some of the guys, and not so much. I mean, I think also maybe at the track and what it takes and what I think the fans deserve and what I know the sponsors deserve. But just trying to stay focused, because, you know, early on in my career, I didn't have that chance to do a lot of things that a lot of kids were able to do. And I probably discovered a lot of that stuff after I was retired, and now I'm...
When you hurt your knee there, you know?
Yeah, and so I think I could lend a lot of those guys, you know, advice to when they go home and things they do and what reflects on their career. And I know a lot of them are young, and they look at it, I'm sure, a lot of the same ways I did. And I had a few guys try to tell me, but I think, what do they know? But I really think that I'm still young enough. I feel like I've done a lot in my life that, you know, you can lend somebody some advice that might... And I really think a lot of the sport, there's a lot of kids out there with a lot of talent, but I think the mental part of it is so big. And I was a mental guy. I like to mentally prepare myself. It wasn't like I meditated, but, man, I like to be mentally prepared and felt that I had that edge over anybody. So, I don't know. That's something I've kind of thought about. I mean, the monster stuff doesn't keep me busy every weekend. All year, you know, probably this year I'll probably end up with, you know, 15 to, you know, around 15 events or 16 events. I'd like to do more, but just the way it falls and with the Air Force and the sponsors. So my ultimate goal is to have my own deal, to do my own semi, my own truck with a large primary sponsor and be able to have more control of what I do. And I mean, they let me do a lot now, but I would like to have, you know, maybe full control to do more stuff that I think could be better.
Well, even going back to the riding coach thing, you know, Jeff just says, he doesn't tell it him, like, yell at him and say, listen, this is what I would do back in the day. This is what you need to do. It's more of a case of, hey, I'm here. I'll help you out. You know, I've been there. I know what you're feeling. And kind of leave it at that, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Nobody needs to, you know, I think a kid will just be like, whatever, old man, you know, I don't need to listen to you about how to ride a bike.
Right.
It's not that. It's right. Everything else. So.
And I'm sure Jeff still rides a lot. And, you know, and I think, and that's some of the reason I've thought of wanting to go back out and ride, because I've thought about maybe trying to go and do that. And I wouldn't only want to stand there. I mean, I'm not going to go out and ride Supercross anymore. At least I say that I wouldn't. But I think, you know, I would like to be able to get out on an outdoor track and ride with whoever whatever team I was with. To ride, you know, whether the speed's there or not, I think I could still go out and have fun. And to me, that would have been a lot of fun when I was younger and in that position.
Yeah.
If there would have been a guy like a Bob or a David or one of those guys that could get out there and dice and ride, and you come in and talk about it, and I think it would be a helpful thing. And I'm sure, especially in Stanton's, you know, position to where I know there for a while he did still ride quite a bit. Probably get out there and kick a majority of them's butts, you know.
Yeah. So no, he claimed right now with a little bit of practice he could probably top five at Outdoor National, and I kind of believe him.
I wouldn't doubt it. I've had so many people that have called me and razzed me about it, and you know, said, why don't you just do it? My brother, he's so funny. He goes, He goes, man, why don't you get in just a little bit of shape and start riding? He goes, and just try to go to Mount Morris and win like five laps.
Yeah, yeah.
And then come in and we'll pull a chair up on the fence and open the cooler and drink a beer and watch the rest of the moto.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You know, I was like, that would be pretty cool, but that wouldn't satisfy me. That wouldn't satisfy me.
I think the fans would probably grab you and throw you on their shoulders and parade you around and come back.
I would love it.
We'll have to get you on that Legends thing. We'll work on that a little bit.
Yeah,
that
would
be
cool.
Get you an older bike. And Glover's on a YZ490, and he's out there.
He can stay on the 490.
We wouldn't get you that bike. We'll work on
that
something.
Would be good.
Work on something newer. Fisher's got a KX500 he does, rides around. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, hey, thanks for doing this. I know I kept you a lot longer than
Well, that's all right. I like doing it, and talking about old stuff is pretty cool. So hopefully everybody will enjoy some of the comedy.
Yeah, no, it was great. Thanks very much, Damon. I appreciate it, and look for this up probably in a week or so.
Okay, I'll try to check it out, tell all my buddies about it so they can laugh, too.
I'll send Angela a link, and that way she can handle it.
Thanks a lot, man. Good luck to you.
All right, thanks, Damon.
All right, bye-bye.
There you have it, another epic RacerX Canada podcast show brought to you by Shift Racing. Shift, the choice is yours. That was Damon Bradshaw. There's nothing else left to be said. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.